Hey, everybody, and welcome back to The Overlay, a poker podcast brought to you by CCG Poker Radio. We're going to get the advertising bits out of the way right now. Brandon, do you want to? Brandon's with us again from quarantine.
Here I am, just quarantining away.
Quarantining away. I mean, Indiana's starting to open up a little bit more, so you can, like, go outside now. Must be nice.
And I can, yeah. Parks are open. Restaurants are open. 50% capacity. Everything non-essential's open.
Everything's open.
It's a zoo.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
I don't want to get into down the COVID
right.
But I mean, it's like Christmas time every day out there. You go out there and it's like Menards, Target, Walmart, every single place. It's like people are shopping at Christmas time.
We'll do a quick, like, under 2 minute COVID deal. We're already into a minute because it's the middle of May 2020. Indiana's open.
Times.
Illinois is closed. Do you see a ton of people in masks, or what's the take on that?
Honestly, it's about, I would say it's 60-40, 70-30 masks.
Okay. So a lot of masks.
I mean, it's the majority of masks, and if people aren't wearing a mask when they're walking into Target, they have them in their hands. You know, it's a decent amount of masks.
Pretty prevalent.
Yeah.
All right.
That's good. Obviously still tons of social distancing going on. I mean, if you're in Target and there's a 10-person line, you're 60 feet back.
Right.
You know, and they're wiping down the counter.
Which I actually, every single one. That might be one thing that I'm willing to keep. I think there should be lines at the supermarket because there are many times when I turn around and look at people like, hey, buddy, back up. Like, what are you breathing down my neck for? Back up. Like, we're not getting any closer. You're not putting anything on the beltway here. Like, move back. Like, why do people want to stand so close? I get a very personal space issues with people.
Yeah, I think the personal space bubble has definitely expanded. Even when there's no more COVID,
right?
In whatever year this thing's all over with,
which is great. That's the one benefit from this. I can't imagine there are many others, but that's one. All right, so
emissions.
We said we were going to mention the sponsors. So,
yes.
Paramount Social out in Houston, Texas. If you're listening to us from Texas, thank you for listening. Texas is also open, which means Paramount opens up tomorrow, which would be 5/20/20. For 7 o'clock, they're doing a $500 free roll, which they always do on Wednesday nights. And if you're listening, check it out. But they're going to be back open to their regular schedule Wednesday through Sunday, cash games and tournaments, albeit six-handed and lots of cleaning and sanitizing. And I think it's Texas, so I don't think they're mandatory masks, although they are strongly encouraged.
But yeah.
I don't think they're forcing. I don't think you can force anybody down there, but that's another story.
Right.
And then CCG Poker is planning. I've been talking to a few peeps since I have the inside scoop on what that's going to happen. We're looking at like end of June, beginning of July, whenever phase four hits in Illinois, which we're supposed to hit phase three here on the 28th of May, right?
Yep.
And then the 24th is the next scheduled phase jump. It's so weird to say phase 24th jump.
24th of June.
Yeah, 24th of June would be phase four, which would be 50-person gatherings. So the plan going forward for CCG, because our predominant, I think, audience is here in Chicago, we're going to be doing 50-person smaller events, six-handed tables, lots of cash games, some less tournaments because it's just with 50 people, it's going to be hard to do a 50-person, because a 50-person early bird's normally kind of a slower bird, right?
Right, right.
So we're just going to kind of see how tournaments go, maybe one or two scheduled tournaments, maybe some more sit and goes. We might see COVID-19 bring back the rebirth of the sit and go.
Yep.
Which would be kind of cool.
I agree with that. Because when you get less players at the table and you get less people in the tournament, you naturally want to raise the buy-in of the tournament to make it worth it, and then which case kind of forms a, you know, 12-person, two-table sit-and-go.
Correct.
And, you know, you can slap $120 in there, and, you know, $100 goes to the prize pool. All of a sudden, you got $1,200 you're playing for, 12 people.
Correct.
You know, boom, bang, boom, 4 hours, and somebody wins $700.
Which is kind of, it's a very small deep stack. But, I mean, again, Again, we have to take what we can do, and we're going to have to get used to shorthanded play, which I'm getting better at my segues. This is going to move us into episode 12. So thank you to CCG Poker and Paramount for continually sponsoring the podcast, even though live poker is currently, up until tomorrow, not a thing in the United States.
It's good to see it back, though.
I'm so happy about live poker. I'm just so tired of people asking about online. It's just, it's so... I don't like online poker. I've never been a big fan. I love playing in person. There's just something about getting up, going. It's like golf. You can't play golf in a screen and call it golf. Right. It's not. It's a video game.
Like Golden Tee is not golf.
No. Even when you're swinging into a simulator, it's still very much not a real game. Right. You got to be outside. I need to feel the smell of smoke and the guy next to me, you know, reeks of skunk. And you know, you got your Todds of the world ordering triple Jacks and Coke, which very little Coke is in there. But that's fine. That's what they want to do. WSB bringing in his, you know, McDonald's cup, hanging out with that.
Jack and Diet.
Jack and Diet. I'm a Jack fan. I'm a Jack Daniels fan.
Yeah, Jack drink, and Diet, it's smooth.
Jack and Diet is my go-to, like, 100% drink. Unless I'm at, like, a fancy place where you get, like, a muddled blood orange something, whatever, costs me $15 just to be cool.
$15 drink for a half a shot.
I would rather have my $3 well Jack and Diet and be very happy. So
yeah, you know, I really quick, you know, there's some doom and gloomers that I've been talking to. They're like, oh, live poker's dead forever. I'm like, come on, guys. Like, let's not... Like, live poker's not dead forever. It's already back in Texas and rolling six-handed.
Right.
Oh, it'll never be the same. Cool. It might never be exactly the same.
Correct.
But live poker is definitely, it's not going to die. It's not going to.
Right. Not to
2024, it's going to be here. The World Series of Poker is going to be running with thousands of people. Like, I don't want to hear that.
At some point.
Dead.
Yep. It's going to happen.
Come on.
It has to happen.
Yeah.
So, again, our segue, which kind of got derailed.
That's fine.
Episode 12.
Underrail it.
Yeah. Episode 12, we're going to discuss final table play, shorthanded play, and ICM. Kind of what is ICM? Because you were always telling me about ICM, and I never fully grasp all of it because I'm not a huge tournament player, and I don't 100%. So we're going to go over all of that stuff. And I think it's very important right now because live poker as we know it is going to be shorthanded games. Like, it's just going to be what it is. And six-handed is really like an optimal number. Seven is really the juicy number. So we're one off from like the absolute nut poker game is a seven-handed game.
Yes.
Correct?
I 100% agree. You're right.
The nine action moves 10, faster. It's just, it's a better game.
Yep, because you get five people, and now all of a sudden it's fold, and you got to raise every single button, and you're playing blind versus blind, a lot of heads-ups, fast. A little bit, like, if people aren't opening up and playing, it's a little boring. And if you get to 10 or 9-handed, it's just fold. You can sit around and wait for queens plus, ace-king.
Tightens up.
And then now you get seven, and now it's, like, the perfect range of, like, and there's, you know, all the positions, early position kind of turns into middle position, and, you know, there's a lot more stealing going on and three-betting, and people just seem to open up a lot more around that seven-handed mark, where it's honestly, it's the most fun to play.
It is.
Because you can
get
widen
to play
your range a little bit, but it's not like four-handed where it's like, oh, it's on me every hand. Gosh, I have eight deuce suited. I have to play here. You know, it's a nice little middle ground where it's good. It's good poker. Seven-handed. So six-handed is pretty close.
Yeah. It's definitely...
But it's definitely different than the nine and ten-handed that people are used to.
Well, let's hop right into it.
Yeah, it's kind of where you start changing gears.
And again, where this all comes from is that the last episode, episode 11, which was how to exploit players on the money bubble, we talked about, you know, how the play is different when the money bubble is about to burst, right? And then this is talking about, we're already into the money. We're kind of going with the tournament mindset here because it's definitely, ICM doesn't really have any kind of, you know, play in a cash game. So, you know, we're talking about final table play. Most final tables are going to start 10-handed, and then they got to work all the way down until your head's up. And so many players, I feel like right now, and just in general, poker players do not want to play shorthanded play, and you have to play shorthanded in order to win a tournament. Because just,
they're uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable.
And there's all these new spots that you've played hundreds of thousands of hands 9-handed, but you haven't played very many hands 5-handed or 4-handed because you only get to play 4-handed when you're down to the final four of the tournament, which I don't care how good you are. It doesn't happen too very often.
Right.
You know,
everybody's experience level goes down as you get less and less players because of the fact that, again, you're used to playing full ring games or full tournaments. And, you know, even like a normal, it's funny because like when you play in a poker tournament and like you lose a player, the guy hasn't even gotten up, the board's not even off the table yet, and you got four other guys at the table yelling, we're down to seven players, we got seven players left, floor.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, guys, one, give the man a second, or lady, you know, not to be sexist here, give the person who just got busted out of the tournament, their tournament dreams are down the drain. Give them a second to collect their thoughts and move on. We haven't even cleared the board yet. Like, they're still making sure they didn't find some secret straight that they missed, or a four flush or something. Like, give them a second. And again, it's not like online where all of a sudden, boop, the tables just magically populate. And
that's my favorite line, when they're like, final table, like, guys, this isn't the internet. Like, I can't just go, boop, boop, and we're dealing at the final table.
Right. Yeah. Like that doesn't happen.
You got to give seat cards. People got to move. They got drinks. They got food. And everyone's got to move all their chips.
Our first rules question, when you're in the WSOP and you move from four tables down to three, do they pause the clock for that table move when you're breaking the table down?
No.
The clock never stops. It's a clock. There's a clock for a reason. Because that's
it's an understood part of the tournament. We don't get to stop the clock when we're combining a table.
No.
Like, I understand it takes 2 minutes, but like, a decision takes 2 minutes and we don't stop the clock.
Correct.
You know, it's like, it's part of the game that tables break all the time. And the clock is just continuous. Could you imagine pausing the clock every time we broke a table in a big 100-person tournament? I mean, it's ridiculous.
The time loss would be an incredible amount. It would make.
And I mean, sometimes people got to go from table 99 to table 2 and walk all the way across the room. And like, I get it. It takes some time, but like, you cannot just pause the clock. That's. No.
It's just, it is what it is. You have to play through it. It's one of the tournament things that you have to do. So let's jump into final table play. So we're in the money. Where do we want to start? We want to start with six players left.
Six players left, and we'll just say they're all already deep in the money. Like, we paid 12.
Okay.
Let's just say we paid 12, 120 person tournament. We paid 10%, 12, and we're down to the final six. So this is our scenario that we're drawing up.
Nice.
So where do you want to start? First of all, I like to, when you get to a final table, it's kind of weird because you kind of have this feeling where you want to feel out how it goes, because some final tables are not all created equal, right? Okay. I mean, there's some final tables that feel so much different than other final tables, and it really all depends on like the chip stacks and who has the chips. Because like, there's sometimes where you get to a final table and there's just an absolute dominant chip leader. He's defined. He has half the chips in play with 10 people left. Average stack only has obviously 10% of the chips, if I'm doing my math right. So he has five times average. That final table is going to play way differently than the final table that has 3 million in chips, 2.8 million, 2.5 million, 2 million, 1. You know,
where the chip distribution is much less. Yeah.
Right. So I think that early on in final tables, and now we're fast forwarding to six, Mac. We're down to the final six, but people really tend to feel it out. People are really kind of playing tight, especially now that we're already in the money. Every single jump is a money bubble, which is where we came up with the episode to do this ICM pressure.
Correct.
And I don't know if you want to just jump right into ICM, because I mean, this whole episode kind of bases around.
Yeah, you're running the show here because you're the expert on ICM. So run with it.
So ICM, independent chip model, I'm going to go with model, is basically like a formula that turns your amount of chips into a dollar value. So it basically does the quick math, and it turns the percentage of chips you have and the percentage of the prize pool your chips are worth. Because, I mean, you get to a final table, and if we paid 12 and we're down to, you know, six, there's still, what, 60, 70% of the prize pool off
the lion's share is left. Yeah.
I mean, most of it is left still. So, I mean, you have to take your chips now, and now they are worth a dollar amount, and you don't want to spend those chips in a poor decision-making. What am I looking for here? Like, you don't want to spend those chips poorly, because that can end up costing you real dollars at the end of the day. So independent chip model is basically saying, a chip earned isn't as much as a chip loss, is basically the easiest way I would say it. If you can have a chance to double your stack or be out, like, you don't want to take that risk unless you have to, even if your hand is slightly superior. Like, I wouldn't take a 60-40.
Let's give it like an actual real world scenario, meaning if there's six players left in the tournament and the third and fourth chip stacks of, you know, the middle of the pack, the two middle pack guys, if you're in a queens versus ace king scenario, the classic flip 50-50, and it doesn't matter, you're just talking about a flip. If you've got either way, kings, or, you know, if you've got the pair or the ace king, ICM starts to think about things where, is it worth me doing this coin flip at this stage in the tournament, even though I'm getting correct odds, it's 50-50, because the problem is the people who are at fifth and sixth in chips have far less chips than you do. You don't want to get knocked out in sixth place because your chips are worth more at that current time than the actual pot would be worth if you won it.
Correct. So I was even going to say, even a 60-40, even if you have king, queen, and the guy shows king, jack, like, depending on the chip counts, if there's fifth and sixth place that are bleeding down to four, five, six big blinds, you guys have 20, 25 big blinds each. Like, if I had king, queen, the guy showed me king, jack, but it was for my tournament life, like, I would probably just fold. Because, like, you're going to be giving up, like, the double up in chips isn't worth the amount of money gained. Where compared to you losing and busting, and the difference between what your chips are worth and sixth place money,
right? Because that's because the difference, like, between sixth place money and fourth place money, right, is a huge,
or third
difference.
Place money is a huge chunk. Whereas your ICM amount of money your chips are worth with a double up is not worth that difference. So, like, that's like the kind of fine tuned math. And this is one of those things where, like, all poker players aren't super equipped with, like, these math formulas in their head. You know, it's kind of like an estimation guessing game. You can't just go and just calculate your ICM and be like,
right,
yeah, this is a clear fold. Like, you can do with pot odds. You can't just take 30 seconds and calculate it out. And most poker players, they're not a calculator when it comes to this, but you need to understand the implications when you're on both sides of the coin. Because if you are a chip leader in this spot, you can now put an enormous amount of pressure on the three and four, the middle of the chip packs, because they don't want to bust sixth or fifth because of these low stacks.
These short stacks,
So now all of a sudden you can be pounding, and they're like, ah, man, I got queens here, six-handed. This would never be a fold in the cash game. I would fist pump, go all in the cash game. If this was 7 hours ago and there was still rebuys in this tournament, I couldn't be happier texting my buddy that I'm getting in with queens here against the maniac chip leader. But in this spot, you might just be like, man, queens, like, this sucks. I don't want to have him come up with ace king and have to race for all my stack. I might just muck it, because that's the how much ICM pressure there is on that person. And now this is all assuming the chip leader assumes that these guys understand what ICM is, because there's nothing worse than, like, thinking that a player is a thinking player that is very aware of these ICM pressures, and then him just be like, I'm in there, I got nines, let's go. And you're like, oh man, I got 8-7 suited, you know. So you have to be aware of, like, your players and that they are understanding of what's going on,
right?
And, you know, so it's, I mean, really, ICM just comes down to, You don't want to be second in chips in the tournament and clash with the chip leader and lose a huge pot.
And that's the simplest way to put it, right?
That's an ICM disaster.
A six-handed final table, you got two clear chip leaders and a bunch of short stacks. You very rarely see the number one, number two chip stacks go at it for big pots because of the fact that it's like, it's just ICM suicide. What are you doing? Like, you could just punt around here for a little bit and get third place money, no problem. Why the heck would you want to risk getting sixth place money? I mean, your chips are worth so much more, even though, like, granted, I'm a, you know, 70% chance. Yeah, it's just like, again, I don't think that goes down the line of people going, well, I want to win the tournament. I want to do everything that I can to win the tournament. And that's absolutely what you want to do. However, it's the smart play. It's the hedging of bets to make sure that you, in the long run, it's a more profitable play to fold in that scenario, or let the big stack get away with pushing a little bit more, because maybe he's crazy. Maybe he doesn't know that this is a, you know, ICM suicide. Maybe he has no idea. He could be the 30% dog, and you still don't want to get involved because of the fact that it's like, why would I want to get knocked out now?
Yeah, so I think that's pretty much, you hit it on the head. You don't want... the best way, I think, is you don't want to get into these pots with these, I'm just trying to have, it's tough to describe without, like, paper and numbers and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Which we don't have.
I'm having, yeah, we don't have that kind of stuff in front of people. I'm having a brain fart. Come back to me.
There's only two people on this podcast, Brandon. You can't just say pass and I'm going to go to pass. And now we have our guest speaker, Phil. Phil, are you still on the line? No, like there's no Phil. Like, you can't like pass to the next guy.
Oh, I got it. So, you know, if you're chip leader and you come up with this pretty good spot to like, you know, maybe play a huge pot against second in chips and increase your chip lead exponentially and give yourself, let's just say, 90% chance to win the tournament. Well, but then if you lose, you're out in sixth or you're really crippled and you're probably going to get sixth place because the second place guy, you guys are pretty much even, you know. So you never, ever, ever want to get sixth place in this tournament. So even though this spot might be good for you to double up or knock out second place and win the tournament, you can just find a better spot when there's three players left.
Right.
Like you can win the tournament later when you have more locked up at the bottom. That's the conservative, smart way to play. Like, don't go for the win with six and then potentially be out in sixth. Like, go for the win with three when you got third place money locked up. And now, sure, your odds now aren't going to be 90% when you win the pot. They might be 60 or 70, but you now have all that extra money of sixth place, fifth place, fourth place
that you've already
locked
banked
up,
right,
to make up the difference in that 90 to 60, which I know is, this is what I was trying to spit out. It's tough visually. And like, again, we're just throwing out arbitrary numbers here and we're not calculators, but you just need to be aware of the situation that when you are short stack and you are sixth place, your chips are worth barely over sixth place money. So like you are at very, you're very much, you're not taking much risk at all when you go all in because you're supposed to get sixth. If sixth place is $1,000, your sixth place chip stack might be worth $1,100, $1,200, $1,300. So, you know, you're all in. There's no ICM pressure on you because you're right, supposed to get out next and you're only risking $200, $300 theoretical dollars. So take that spot, try and double up because now here when you double up and you're third, well, now you doubled up, but your chips to dollar ratio more than doubled up.
Correct.
If your short stack is worth $1,200, you double up. It's not worth $2,400 now. It might be worth $4,000. Hmm. And so that's why when you're sixth in chips, you know, you can say the opposite of these guys that have ICM pressure, that, you know, chips earned are worth more than chips lost because you're gaining equity by doubling up more than double, where these guys at the top are losing much more dollars than they are gaining chips.
Right. And the whole dynamic of the table changes.
Oh, it's massive. So another one thing that we failed to discuss is chip leaders. Let's fast forward to four-handed. Let's just say we're down to four-handed and it's like a chip leader that has 70% of the chips and the other guys have 10%. You know, because that's just nice, easy math. 100% of chips. 70, 10, 10, 10. Four people left. The chip leader is incentivized to keep it four-handed because of ICM pressure, because those fourth, third, and seconds are fighting to get second, not fourth, so hard that you can just accumulate and accumulate and accumulate, and you want it to last as long as possible four-handed because you can just suck up all the chips because they're honestly, they're not playing for second, but a second would be a win in the current situation that they are at.
Right.
So they're all three, basically, they have 10%, 10%, 10%. They're all, on average, going to get third place money because, you know, we got second, third, fourth, you average them, you got there. So each of them is trying not to get fourth because that's a loss and to get second, which is a win in their current situation. So the chip leader can just, they love it when, you know, not they don't love it when they double them up, but when a guy ships on them and they fold, like, it's no biggie. Like, we're going to play another hand and I might win more chips because they shipped on me. And, like, so just know that, like, keeping it four or five handed when you're a massive chip leader is to your advantage. And that's kind of backwards thinking because you're like, why would it be? I want there to be no players left but me. But this is just a way for you to suck up more chips and get such a huge advantage that the guys aren't even playing for first anymore. They're happy with second place. Which is why in a couple times in CCG, I've seen four people left and they go, we're going to give the guy first with the chip leader and then we're going to play. We're just going to chop second, third, and fourth money up together.
Which always blows my mind that anybody would want to take a deal like that. But I guess in all honesty, if you got one guy with 70% of chips in play and you each have 10%, you're right. The idea of getting fourth and you really want to get third, and it would be a super win to get second, it's like, I'm kind of willing to take my, you know, almost between second and third place money by chopping it for, you know, giving him first place and then the rest of them splitting second, third, and fourth. I mean, they average out a little bit more money than
true, but that's assuming that these short stacks never get first. So they're, right. You know, they're giving up
the chance.
Equity on top. They're giving up the actual money equity, because giving a guy first place with four handed left is crazy time in theory. Like in straight dollars and cents, it's, but they're willing to, you know, give themselves insurance and say, well, I get this pay jump from fourth to third, which in the spot I'm in right now would be a break even. I'd be upset with fourth. I'm break even with third. I'm happy with second. And I'm ecstatic if I ever can come all the way back and win. They're going to just take the win out and they're going to say, well, I'm not going to get second. I'm happy with our third place money, all three of us. And they hedge out. It's basically just a hedge. They're saying, I'm willing to leave with a little bit more instead of gambling here with
right.
Four big blinds.
Now, is there any way to use this information to your advantage? Obviously, everybody, we've gone over how to use it to your advantage when you're the big stack, when you're the chip leader of the tournament. How do you use this to your advantage when you're one of the middle stacks? And even the small stacks, we're kind of going with the idea of you've got four to five big blinds, you're on life support, you're looking for a hand, and it's not even a great hand, you're just looking for a face card. Maybe even a whatever. You're just looking for something that may or may not work. And it really kind of depends on where you're at in the blinds. Sometimes it's like, I got four big blinds left and I'm coming with the big blind. Well, this is it. And
right.
Maybe the hand before you've got king five and you're like, my big blind might not be as good as king five. So rip it. I'm in. At this point, I have no choice. I'm literally down to my last. Do I want to go with king high or do I want to just take my chances with two random cards when I'm forced to be the big blind next? Plus,
right. So
you might get a little bit of fold equity, not a ton, but maybe a little bit. You might get a guy with a king 10 or 7 to fold out because you did it
right.
On the button, or you know, you did it earlier than you were supposed to. But anyways, sorry, that's just
you have some fold equity.
Again, a minuscule amount, but there is just that little bit of doubt, which is important. So again, sometimes you'll see those short stacks, you got to rip a king five or a jack deuce as Stacia would do, because just like,
I'm in there.
How does the middle guy work this to his advantage? How do you try to reverse some of these pressure situations where you can pick up some extra money by playing a middle stack better?
So this is going right in line with our previous episode.
Okay.
Because there's no ICM pressure on the bottom, and there's you know how to play the big stack on a bubble. It's the same exact thing on ICM. And the small stacks, you play tight, you wait for a hand. There is no ICM pressure. You know, these small guys, there's no pressure because
all the pressure is on the middle stacks.
So the middle stacks, it's where we get this dividing road that we mentioned last episode. You can try and be the one that applies the ICM pressure on the other middle stacks because they should be aware of it and folding out much more. But that is the same double-edged sword where you end up committing an ICM disaster when the other guy doesn't fold out when he's supposed to, or the other guy picks up a huge hand. You have now just committed an ICM suicide because you got sixth when you were just trying to push the fourth place chips off of a huge hand because he's got to fold.
Or he's supposed to fold.
He's supposed to fold, but A, he picks up aces or kings, or B, he doesn't really realize what's going on, and he's got ace-jack suited, and it's a clear fold from ICM standards, but he has no idea, and he's in there. You lose a race, you lose a 60-40, you lose whatever, and now all of a sudden you have committed a disaster, and you've gotten sixth when you have fourth and chips, and there's two shorties. So the middle is kind of, it's a gray area. I don't even know. It's tough because there's pressure all over the place. There's pressure from the top. There's pressure from the side. There's obviously no pressure from the guys who have no pressure, but those guys can hurt you too. You don't just want to give them a courtesy double because now all of a sudden you turn into the short stack.
Right.
So the middle is the hardest. It's the hardest to play probably on the bubble too. You have to decide which way you're going to go and, you know, take that path. Here, I really don't have any answers. I mean, it's really probably... It's very much final table dependent. It has very much to do with how much blinds you have. Is your middle stack 8 big blinds, or is your middle stack 25 big blinds?
Right.
Because if your middle stack's 8 big blinds, I'm just going to play super tight, because if I'm in the middle and have 8 big blinds, that means these shorties have 4, 3, 2 big blinds. I'll let the chip leaders try and knock them out.
Whereas if the middles have 25 big blinds and the shorties have,
10, 12.
I was going to say 7, 8. Now they are able to kind of, everything kind of slows down a little bit. So it's just, it is, you got to be aware of, and it's hard to do that in the tournament itself because you're getting hands so fast. And that's the other thing that happens. The game speeds up.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what happens, because there's just every, it's like, good God, I haven't even fixed my chip stacks. The waitress came over. I can't do anything. It's like, man, hand. You feel that stress from just, you don't get any chance to, and typically a lot of the hands I find at a final table, there's a lot of pre-flop, right? Like it's, everybody's trying to finagle their way to either get a fold pre-flop. Not many people are seeing flops, and then
you're not taking too many flops because the blinds are so small. It doesn't fit well for
doesn't
flops
happen.
To even show up.
A lot of final table play is just all pre-flop. Right. Or an all-in and a fold. Three bet, all-in, fold. Okay, next hand. It's like, Jesus, I didn't even get a chance to. I always love the people that have to go pee, and they're like, can we get a break? You're like, guys, the breaks are scheduled. We're not just going to randomly take a break. It's not fair. Like, it is what it is. And then you get the guy who's like, looks at his button, runs to the bathroom, like, bolt, get out of my way, tries to go pee, comes flying back. He's like, I'm here, to try to get the dealer to acknowledge the fact that they're, I'm air quoting now, within sight of their seat, so that their hand doesn't get folded. It's just the funniest thing. I don't know. Is it something about poker players that everybody believes that if they get up and use the restroom or get up to go do whatever it is and they miss a hand, that's always going to be the hand that they have aces or kings on?
Yep. That's just, they don't want to miss a hand. I mean, dude, it's just as likely, it's evenly as likely that you get the hand that you would have busted on.
Right.
As you do, you get the hand that you double up on.
You just never know. It's the whole, Forrest Gump syndrome is life's like a box of chocolates, or everybody's fate is predetermined. Like, fate already knew you were going to go to the bathroom at that time, so there's zero chance you're going to get a good hand or bust. It was never going to happen. You were always going to leave at that particular moment. Or maybe Forrest Gump's mom is right, and you just open that box of chocolates and see what you get and hope for the best.
Speaking of going to the bathroom, how much time do we have left? You're the time master.
Yeah, we're at like 32 minutes.
All right, so I got a quick 3 minutes.
I mean, should we put out a warning system here of like, this is a Brandon bathroom story, or?
It is a Brandon bathroom story.
You have been forewarned, folks, if you are not into bathroom stories. Thanks for listening to episode 12. For the rest of you into Brandon's bathroom time, please hang on for our bonus episode.
All right. So $1,650 HPT.
Ooh.
Day two, in the money, dinner break day two, 20 players left.
Okay.
20 players left on three tables. 260K for first.
Wow.
I am a shorty. I'm a shorty. I'm like probably, I would say, 15th in chips with 20 left. We're on dinner break. Serene's still in. White Sox Brian's still in. I'm all in the down in the dumps. Like, man, I just punted off a double, or I call off with ace queen, and I thought the old guy had ace king, and he did, and I lost, and I'm down to 12 big blinds. So we go to dinner. This is at the Ameristar in East Chicago. They just opened a new sports bar there. I get this like huge, massive, like double pound burger, bacon, blah, 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 fries. I mean, it's nice. Probably one of the biggest burgers I've ever had.
Pre-keto, obviously.
And I'm just, pre-keto. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I eat this thing. And I'm like, dude, why did I do that? Like, I'm at the final 20 playing for literally over $200,000, and I just feel god awful.
Right.
Like, if this was Thanksgiving, this is the time where you flip on football and you take a 2-hour nap. And then
you turn on the Detroit game and you just fall asleep.
And instead, I'm going back up to battle my way out in like where you should be the mentally sharpest, where the pros have eaten like a cantaloupe, a grape, and an avocado toast. And they're drinking, they're like room temperature Fiji water.
Right.
Well, I'm just like slugging the Diet Pepsi.
Oh, for sure. Like,
I got this pound burger. This is longer than 3 minutes.
It reminds me of that sing in that scene in Kingpin where like Woody Harrelson's walking into like the Vegas at the end of the movie and like they're eating pizza, they're smoking, they're like, dude, yep. like that's like yep. how I envision a poker tournament is, but like
yep.
really good hardcore tournament players. They're like, got to get my electrolytes up. They drink a little bit of Gatorade, room temperature water. They do some stretches at break.
I think of Backpack Dan, where he always brought like the salads and like his wife cut up nice fruit salads for him. And like, it was just, I mean, that's just, you know, it's not, that's great. I mean,
so Brandon goes full opposite, basically.
And I'm in full depressed mode. Like I'm going to bust. And
right.
White Sox Brandon's like, dude, you're on the dinner break of day two. Like, get it together here, kid. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, be happy.
What are you doing?
Right. I got like 7,000 locked up and I'm all upset. So get back to the table. Shit you not. Double up twice. King, queen of clubs against ace, queen. I flop a flush draw, river a club, double. Two hands later, queens against jacks, hold. So now I've spun 13 to 26, 26 to like, it may have been like 8 to 16, 16 to 32.
Right.
I'm middle of the pack now. I'm pumped. Heart's blasting. You know, I'm just like, wow, I can't believe. Like, I can just sit around here and make the final table. And, like, making the HPT final table is pretty huge. I mean, you're absolutely on the stream. And now, like, you know, I'm into the money for, like, 8,000. Final table, min cash, ninth place was, like, 15K. And this was 3 years ago. 15K would have, like, you know, doubled or tripled my bankroll.
Right.
Like, this is now, I mean, obviously 250K is life-changing money. But, like, top seven is life-changing money for me.
Right.
So, adrenaline's pumping, and all of a sudden, my stomach is just rumbling, like you would not believe. And so now I'm just like, well, shit, it's like 15 or 14 left, and I'm in a seven-handed table. I'm trying to time out. Like, I'm like, I got to go to the bathroom. Like, I got to go. Like, I don't even know if I have to, like, I don't even know what I have to do. I just know I have to go to the bathroom.
I got to get out of here.
Right, I got to get out of here. So I'm like, well, I don't want to do it when my blinds are coming up, because I don't want to miss my blinds, but I don't want to like do it around the button area because that's like the prime position. So I do it when I'm like middle position and I run to the bathroom, and I don't know how graphic you want to get here, but I just made myself throw up. I was like,
I was thinking it was going to come out the other end.
No,
just some butterflies and some things were happening, and
And I mean, and then this, you know, without getting too graphic, my whole entire meal that I scarfed down for four came right back up. And I mean, I went like just full blown, you know, fingers down the throat, boom, 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 boom. There was somebody else in the bathroom. I was just like, so now I come out, like, I got a little bit around my mouth, like I'm sweating, I'm all red and flustered. I just like splash some cold water on my face, wipe my face down, wash my hands, and I'm back in there now. I mean, we're talking about, like, I was in the bathroom for 2 minutes maximum, and a lot happened in that 2 minutes. So now I get back to the table and I'm under the gun. And so I'm like, oh, I made it back in time. Like, let's go. I'm so pumped. I made it back in time. I look down at Jack Nine of Diamonds and I'm so just flustered and, you know, not in it and not like realizing what's going on here. And I raise it up. So I just get back and I'm like tilted and I just raise up the Jack Nine of Diamonds, folds all the way around to the big blind. The big blind min clicks it back to me. Min three bets back. I'm like, well, it's Jack Nine of Diamonds. I'm calling here. I call. It's an ace high board, all three diamonds. So I flop a Jack high flush, like third nuts. King high flush beats me. Queen high flush beats me. That's it. But it's an ace high board. And the dude leads out, and I raise, and he goes all in, and I snap call, and he has pocket aces for a set of aces, and it runs out like 4-4, and I get out of the tournament.
No.
For like a second in chips or third, like top three chip stack. I rushed back in, and I'm talking, I was sat down and raised Jack Nine suited 3 seconds after I sat down. So like, I just got there back in time enough to get it in real good with, I mean, the equities on that, that's probably like a $50,000 hand. That guy went on to win the tournament. Gary went on to win the tournament.
Oh, nice.
And for 256K, and I busted 14, all because two things happened. I was kind of upset because, A, I think I never, if I never ate that burger or felt crappy or had to go to the bathroom, I just would have mucked Jack Nine suited. You know, because it's under the gun. You're mucking that. It's a tournament. Right. It's an easy decision muck. But because I came back and was flustered and I was upset, I missed three hands and I wasn't feeling great, I opened it up. And so that's just kind of going along with the lines of sometimes you're going to make it back in time and it's going to cost you your tournament. It's not always going to be. So if I just would have stayed in the bathroom 20 seconds longer, I would have made it for my big blind, would have folded the Jack Nine. And who knows? I mean, who knows what would have happened then? But just a little story of I really
don't always run back, let your hands go through. Sometimes you rush back to only get busted from the tournament.
Yep. And I blame that burger for my 14th place. Because I was fifth, sixth, or seventh in chips, could have glided to the final table.
Kind of committed some ICM death watch there.
Yes.
It happened.
Even though it was a good spot. And if I could do it again, I'm not really sure what I would do.
Nice.
It's one of those, you'd have to plug that into a calculator.
See what your odds were.
I gave up thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, but I was like 72% or whatever. You know, and then he misses on the turn, and all of a sudden I'm like, I'm at 80%. This is great.
I know,
I'm going to double up.
I know maybe your intent on the story was the bathroom portion of it, but I think ultimately this screams what ICM, the decisions that you make and how your chips are worth real money. And it's very difficult at times in a tournament to think about the actual chips, each one having an individual dollar amount assigned to them. Because like you said, if you'd have folded there, you probably would have made the final table and gotten, you know, top
15,000 to 200,000 instead of 7,000.
Correct. So, I mean, even just say final table and you brick out there and get 9th place, 10th place, whatever it is, and you get the 15K. I mean, you gave up $8,000 because of that. And again, you're a 70% favorite, but you gave up so much money. I mean, it's not the 8,000, it's the 8,000 plus all of that potential money that you gave up, that if you just would have coasted for a little bit, you probably easily could have gotten into 7th,
right.
8th place.
Yeah, which is now 25.
Playing super tight, super knit, super, you know, top range poker here and have been fine. But
right, where I double up, yes, I would have been 3rd in chips and could have now much easier attained 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. Like, it still might not have been worth it.
Might not have been worth
it. 70%.
I mean, as it turns out, it wasn't worth it because you lost, but even if you take that exact scenario, hey, I have a 70% chance to win or bust and lose minimum 8K. You lost $8,000 in that hand.
Easily.
Minimum, you lost 8,000. It's like, does the potential of where you're going to be at in the tournament go? I mean, granted, it's nice that Gary ended up going on to win that tournament, but you never know how the cards would have played out at that point. But it's interesting.
Oh, sure,
ICM I find it to be kind of, it's next level thinking. And on top of that, it's like such a weird, like hypothetical, like, is it worth it? Well, I'm a 70% chance favorite. Why would I ever not take that bet? Well, the reason is what we just stated, that you lost.
And this is where you need like an actual calculator, but there is math behind it. You can search like ICM, like examples, and it'll give you the exact math of here's the chips you're giving up that are worth this amount of money. And now if you win, you now have this, you have this equity worth this amount of money.
Right.
So is it worth that risk?
Well, cool. I love it. ICM, yeah. What is it? How to play it and what to do with it?
And even like me, I have a great understanding of ICM, but I don't know every decision.
Correct. It's still kind of a, you're still nervous about the decisions that you made and if it's the right one using these new factors. But
yes,
that's going to wrap it up for episode 12 of the Over the Poker Podcast. Thank you for listening again. As always, guys, please leave us a review. All reviews are welcome. I know we always joke and say, please only leave us 5-star reviews. And we really want you to leave a 5-star review. But follow us on Twitter at @theoverlay_pod. Please do not spell out underscore, because I did get an email from somebody who's like, why did I? And like, that's not right. It's just a little underscore, you know, character. Also subscribe and you know, share with your friends, even your non-poker player friends. Just, hey, listen to these two ding-dongs.
I like to think we entertain.
We are entertaining.
We can entertain all genres.
Anything. Top 5 podcast of all time.
Wow, that's strong. I like it.
I mean, at this point, 45 minutes in, how many people are really not thinking this is a top 5 podcast? I figure anybody listens to us for 45 minutes, like my mom thinks this is a top 5 podcast. So it's great.
That is the most logical thing you've said today.
Yep. Pretty good. ICM right there, folks. Well, thank you for listening. We will catch you next time. Brandon, anything you want to finish off with?
Mean, I really like my Welcome Back America, because I really do. I am pleased that we are trying to get back to some sort of normalcy here.
God bless America. I want to get back to normal.
I like
something closer to normal than what we're currently at.
Yes.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next time. Episode 13. Ooh, scary. Bye.